page before you?
All right, now, let's start at the beginning. Where were you born?
Where'd
you grow up?
I was born in Warsaw on May 1st, 1923. My mother was Polish. My father was Russian. He came from a small village, a shtetl, called, that was, in Yiddish, it was called Zvihil.
You know how to spell? Oh, no.
Z-V-H-I-L would be approximately the phonetic spelling. It was close to the city of Novgorod-Volinsk, which still exists, although Zvihil may not. At any rate, it's not on any map. It's in the Ukraine. My father's father, my grandfather was named Nathan, and I was named after him because, following Jewish tradition, he was already dead when I was born. When my father was born, my grandfather was 65. He was very poor. They lived in a house that leaked, the roof leaked. There was no decent heat in the house. He was an itinerant used clothes salesman because in those days, of course, Jews in Russia were not permitted to own property. And there were a lot of occupations that were closed to them. When my father was born, his mother was about 30 or so. And I don't remember exactly how old he was when she died, but he was in the neighborhood of perhaps preteen, certainly. She died of tuberculosis. And so he was raised by an older sister who was many years older than he from a former marriage. My grandfather was a widower at the time he married my grandmother. And so there were at least, I believe, three children of a former marriage. The oldest was an aunt who stayed at home and helped keep house for my grandfather after my grandmother died, and also helped raise my father. I met her several times many, many years later. She was already in her 80s, and it was in the United States that I met her. My mother's family was Polish.
What was your father's name?
My father's name was Boris. That was his Russian name. His Yiddish name was Beryl. B-E-R-Y-L. But everyone knew him as Boris. My mother's family was Polish. Her maiden name was Lichtenbaum. L-I-C-H-T-E-N-B-A-U-M. She, although she was born in Warsaw, and her mother and her father lived in Warsaw, the seat of the family was in Łódź.
Was where?
Łódź, which is spelled L-O-D-Z.
Uh-huh.
But the L has a line through it, so it's pronounced like a W. And the family was a very big and important family, and a very wealthy family. My grandfather was in the grain business. This I got from my father, so I really have, know very little about him. But apparently he was in a grain business which flourished before World War I, and they were quite wealthy. But after World War I, Jews met with considerable disfavor in Poland because they were dealing with the Germans and they were dealing with everybody and they were selling grain. So they were considered disloyal and they were not treated very well. In addition, my grandfather prayed a lot. He spent more time praying than he did in business, with the result that the business declined. I remember my grandfather. I can picture him. He had a beard, typical, I would say, of the religious Jews at the time.
What was his first name?
I don't remember his first name, and I'm not certain. I have it. I'll recall it if I had to. I think my grandmother's name was, her name was Esther. I'm not certain.
And, again, and your mother's name?
My mother's name was Gertrude. We lived together with my grandparents. My grandmother was always sick, or at least she pretended to be sick. She complained of migraine headaches. My mother was the eldest of about, I think, seven children. All but one of whom were killed in the Holocaust. I had lots of cousins. My mother had one sister who was really very, very beautiful. She married a very rich man. But they lived apart. The only ones who lived with my grandparents were my parents and I. And my mother, being the eldest, essentially kept house for my grandfather and my grandmother. And my major recollections of my grandmother was that she was always in bed, always complaining of a headache, and always taking these little powders, which you mixed with water, bromides. My mother was did all the cooking, and once in a while my grandmother would call and my mother came and gave her whatever she wanted. Now, my grandmother was a very pleasant woman. She was not an unpleasant woman. It's just that in those days I think people took these things, illnesses, a lot more seriously than they do now. In any event, my grandmother, having come from a very wealthy family, was used to being cared for. My mother was around to care for her. So my mother was always very busy.
I think that went on in families anyway.
It is traditional, and in fact, I've talked to other people. For example, I had a very close friend who was Greek, and he said in Greece it was exactly the same thing. The eldest girl really kept house for the rest of the family. And in fact, the eldest was often the last to get married because she couldn't get married until all the younger people were married off. So it was fairly traditional, and my mother fell into the pattern. And so she was very busy, and she didn't have a lot of time with me, and I sort of rattled around this big house, whose number, by the way, is number 8, Ulica Bonifraterska, if anyone is interested. That is it's a big street. It's a major street in Warsaw. And when I was in Warsaw, I went to look for it. And the street is still there. Ulica Bonifraterska is still there. But all of the houses had been destroyed by the Germans during the
occupation.
Do you
still speak Polish? I mean,
no.
The way you say that,
it rattles off.
Polish. Yeah.
I know all the Polish sounds, but I can't speak it. No, in fact, the reason I can't speak it is because when we came to the United States, after a while, I spoke Polish with my mother, but after a while, my mother said that she preferred that I speak English because she wanted to learn English. And my father, by that time, was really quite fluent in English, so I stopped speaking Polish. And,
how old were you when you came to the United States?
Well, let me go.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So we lived with my grandparents, and I have a lot of memories of Warsaw, and memories of Passover service and the places where the cold cellar where we kept all our food through the summer and so on. When I came to the United States, I was 6 years old. My father had preceded us by 2 years, and that was he came in 1927. In 1927, there was a booming economy in the United States. And he had been the agent for Hayas in Warsaw. And so, for many years, my father helped Poles get to the United States. After a while, the conditions in the 20s and 30s in Poland were very poor, very bad. The Depression hit Europe just as it did the United States. But in Poland, things were bad even long before our Depression. It was the Depression of post-World War I Europe. And my father felt very uncomfortable in Poland and decided he'd come to the United States. So he came.
What did he do for a living?
Well, in Poland, he was head of he ran Hayas office. But eventually, since he was getting passports and visas for Poles, he got himself one too, and came to the United States. He got to the United States, and things were good. So he got a job working for a radio company, which made Feta radios. Now, Feta was a company that was well known even in my day as being a manufacturer of premium radios, high-priced radios. But my father had a very interesting history, and just to go into one little element of that, when he was a young man in Zbihil, he quickly gained a reputation for being very intelligent and a very good teacher. So he was chosen by the governor of the province, who was of course not Jewish, to be the tutor to the governor's daughter, who at that time may have been 6, 8, 10, somewhere in that range. As a result, when my father wanted to get an education, the governor came to his help. Now in those days, in that area, Jews were not permitted to go to college. So the governor arranged for my father to matriculate. However, being as anti-Semitic as they were, this had to be done under certain restricted circumstances. Namely, he was not permitted to attend classes because they didn't want Jews attending classes. I mean, after all, they could probably sweep under the table the fact that my father was going to be allowed to take the exams, but it would have been too obvious had he attended classes. So the governor arranged for him to matriculate, and he did, but he could not attend classes. As a result, he had to take all of the exams during a very limited period of time, and he did, and he passed. And he was qualified to teach history. So when he came to the United States, it was really his intention to become a history teacher. And he applied to the Board of Education in the U.S. In New York City. And they accepted him with one proviso. And that was that he had to have a few courses in English. Well, working during the day meant that he had to take his courses in the evening. And he did. He attended City College and studied English and was nearly finished when the Depression hit in 1929. At that point, the school told him that they were no longer hiring anyone. And so my father never fulfilled his early ambition to be a history teacher. Well, it was just about that time that he decided to bring us to the United States. And so we came to the United States.
After we being you and your
my mother and I, yeah, my mother and I came to the United States in 1929. Well, it was early in 1930, and the Depression was already underway, and there were no jobs to be had. My father, who had been working at Fader Radio up to that point, quit Fader Radio, so he told me, because they were now expecting a foreman, and he was a foreman at that point, to essentially, as he put it, to be a slave driver. His job was to make sure that everybody worked as fast and as hard as they could. And that job didn't suit his personality very well, so he quit. And he got a job working in a dress factory for a man who he had known, I guess, in Russia, or at least with whom he had some kind of connection. And when my mother and I came to the United States, she immediately went to work for the same person. And it was a bit of a sweatshop. They worked 6 days a week. They had Sunday off, but they worked long hours. My mother was given an exception. She could leave mid-afternoon on Saturday because there was a young child at home, and that young child was me. So,
who watched you during the, you know?
Well, no one actually did, but this was in the summer, you know, and after a month or two, I was put in school, and so she felt safe, at least, that part of the day I'd be out of harm's way.
But you were only six.
Yeah, I was only six. But so they put me into first grade, and it didn't take very long for me to learn enough English to get by. My father spoke it very well at this point. So I remember my days in my first day at school. My mother took me to school, and she said a few words to the teacher and handed her a piece of paper, and she said goodbye to me, and she left. And I didn't see her for the rest of the day. I felt very shy. The teacher was very nice. She tried to get me into the class, and the class consisted of a group of children, and they were going to get into a circle and do some sort of a little dance or song or something in a circle. And so I was invited to join the circle, but I hung back because it was a whole new experience to me. And in fact, it was more than a new experience because until we came to the United States, I was never permitted to go out on my own. The only time I ever went out of the house was in the company of my mother.
It's interesting that you remember so far back before you were 6 years old.
Well, these are all vivid memories, and, you know, they were not always pleasant memories. They weren't terribly unpleasant, but they weren't exactly pleasant either, so they have a certain value to me to remember them. They have a certain keepsake quality because they're memories that relate to pivotal times in my life. Anyway, after a couple of days, I did get integrated. Well, actually, by the end of the day, I was integrated in the class. The teacher was really very nice, and I must say, I commend her for being so gentle in trying to encourage me to participate. And she did, and after a while, I did start to participate. So the first day went not so badly, and the second day, I was already used to the idea. My mother explained to me that she had to go to work and I had to go to school, and it was that. So I went to school. I remember a lot of incidents that relate to that time. One of them is sort of interesting. Again,
where did you live in New York?
Oh, we lived in the Bronx. And we lived in one room in an apartment that belonged to a violin maker. We had one room, one chest of drawers, and one bed, and that was it. And the apartment was a belonged to a violin maker, as I said, and my father was renting this room. And the violin maker had another room, which was his workshop. One of the major prohibitions, and I was warned about this many times, was never to enter that workshop. Well, one day my father presented me with a gift. It was a junior size violin that this violin maker had made for me. I don't know whether my father paid for it or whether it was a gift from the violin maker, but it was certainly a gift from my father who presented it to me. The violin maker, in the meantime, discovered, quite by accident, that I had entered his workshop out of curiosity. So I owned that violin for all of one day. When that was discovered, that violin was taken away from me. At the time, I was almost grateful because I wasn't looking forward to practicing violin all day. Really, I had nothing to do with myself after I came home from school, and, you know, idleness makes for mischief. And so I was curious enough, and I sneaked into his room. And I remember seeing that glue pot. I can picture that room now. And it was the glue pot that fascinated me, because it was used. They use a glue made from horses' hooves, and it has a nice, strong odor. And when it's melted by putting a fire under it, he had a little Bunsen burner to heat up. And when it gets melted, it's soft, and there's a brush that sticks in it, and when the flame is put out, the whole thing hardens, and the brush sticks in, and it's hard as a rock. Of course, that's for good reason. It's for good reason that they use glues like that, so they can take a violin apart if they have to without damaging anything. Well, I was fascinated by the fact that here is this thing that's hard as a rock with a brush, the glue brush, sticking in it. How in the world did I get that glue brush out? Well, that's what got me into trouble. I must have tried physically to do it, and the violin maker must have noticed that glue pot had been disturbed. That's my guess. At any rate, I had that violin for all of one day, and my father was very angry because he said I must never go into the workshop, and I violated that one prohibition. Now, of course, many years later, I have reason to regret not learning how to play the violin, because I love music, and I can't play it. I don't play a single instrument. We could never afford a piano for that. So that was life in the Bronx. After about a year, it was obvious that the quarters were much too tight for us. So my father found an apartment on Prospect Avenue in the Bronx, which was larger in the sense that it was still one room. And because they didn't have much money, it was sort of a basement apartment. It was not in the basement directly, but you walked down some steps to get into it. It had one room, but it had a kitchenette, so my mother could do her own cooking, which did not have that facility where we had lived before. And there was a bathroom. We had a private bathroom. And those two facilities made a big difference in our life. But the kitchenette didn't have a sink in it. The sink was the sink in the tub in the bathroom. So whenever guests came, the first thing they said, well, they come for dinner, where do we wash? And my father would say, well, you have to wash in the bathtub. You have to wash your hands from the faucet in the bathtub. And that was a never-ending joke whenever people came to the house. It was always, where do we wash? In the bathtub, and then somebody would say, ha, ha, ha. And they always teased my father, but he took it well. Of course, he knew that they didn't mean anything by it. And of course, in those days, I think people recognized that not everyone had money, and life was hard. Well, that was my first real sense of freedom, living in that house, because on Prospect Avenue, I very quickly had lots of friends. By that time, my English was quite good. It was good from the very beginning, I must say. And there were a lot of kids in the neighborhood. We had a lot of friends. And after school, I would do what they did. And what they did was, one of the big activities was to make scooters. Now, a scooter is made by taking a board and putting on one end wheels from a baby carriage. There were lots of old baby carriages lying around. I cannot imagine why, but there were. We'd take the wheels off and put them on one end, and the other end you put a crossbar that flexed, and you put another pair of wheels on there, and you made a scooter, and you sat on the scooter. And there was a big hill down on one side of one street, cross street, and so we'd always ride down that hill in traffic, you know, and it's amazing that we weren't killed. I only mention this because I had one serious accident. It was not terribly serious in hindsight, but it was serious, and my parents took it very seriously. The rubber wheels came off, the rubber tires came off the rear wheels. And I was sitting on someone else's scooter, facing backwards. He was driving, facing forwards. And we were rolling down this hill at a pretty fast speed when inadvertently my hand hit the rim of the wheel. And the wheel had no tire on it, so the metal edges were very sharp, and it was like a buzzsaw, and it cut a huge gash in my wrist. Well, I came home. My parents were still at work. It was about 5:30 or so, and my father was due home very shortly.
How old were you?
I must have been about 7 or 8. And so I was really afraid that he'd get very angry. So I took a towel and I wrapped it around my wrist, and the towel got very bloody because I was bleeding profusely. Luckily, I thought I could stop the blood. I mean, it was a huge gash. You know, it was a half inch deep and about 2 inches long. It went halfway around my wrist. My father came home and he saw this and he got very upset. And of course, very angry. But more upset than angry. So he rushed me off to his friend and colleague, a physician he had known in Russia. I got stitched up with benefit of very little Novocaine. But I watched with fascination as I got stitched up. It was really interesting. I mean, he used a nice curved needle, and he used some kind of a gut or something, and he just stitched it up just as you would stitch up anything, you know, you can imagine. And he bandaged it. And in no time at all, I was well. My wrist is in good shape. Luckily, I did cut a nerve, but luckily I didn't cut a tendon, so all my fingers operated. That was not, and of course I remember a lot of other experiences. I don't know how much you want me to go into all of this.
As much as you want. I see it from here.
Okay.
We lived on Prospect Avenue for about a year. I have lots of. I can picture that whole neighborhood. There was a subway station nearby.
Was it all Jewish? Was it all Jewish neighborhood?
I wasn't even aware of whether it was or not. It probably was, because in hindsight I know that Prospect Avenue is a Jewish neighborhood in New York, in the Bronx. Do you know the Bronx?
I don't know the Bronx so well.
Well, Prospect Avenue is a Jewish neighborhood, but that question never even entered my mind at the time. There were lots of experiences. I used to climb around and do all sorts of crazy things. One thing that that for a long time stuck with me was the gift. My father had a niece who was my cousin. She was the daughter of the aunt who had raised him. She lived in New York. And she was quite well-to-do by our standards. Her husband was a big shot in Bond Clothing, which was a very important company in those days. And she would come over from time to time and visit her uncle, my father. And one day she gave me a $10 bill. And I remember this because it was right close to the subway. And she gave it to me and she said, "Here, this is for you." Well, it was a lot of money.
That's right.
It was certainly a lot of money for me.
Yeah.
So So my mother said to me when she found out about it, she said, I'll keep it for you. A week went by, 2 weeks went by. I said, where's my $10? Oh, she says, what $10? She said, I spent it on your socks,
aww,
on your underwear. She said, that money is gone. I spent it all for you. I said, really? Oh, I was angry. That wasn't really the first time I was angry with my mother. I guess the worst experience I had with my mother was when my father left. This is backtracking a little. My father had made plans to go to the United States, and I didn't know about them. I had never been told that he was leaving. One night, I went to sleep, and I woke up. I heard noises and all sorts of excitement in the kitchen. That woke me up.